Coming up, it's at the center of so many of our debates these days. There it is right there. It's the U.S. Constitution. Is it perhaps the problem and not the solution?
We did it as a way to bring attention to the fact that more guns means mugging, stabbings, deaths, world tyranny, duck hunting, tyrannical government, and street thugs. Real violent crime, death with an iron rod 4 feet long. You can't ban the iron rods. Hordes of people burning down cities and beating old women's brains out every day. Knives, bats, rocks, kill. Suicide pills.
Alex.
Mass murder pills.
Okay. So
they give people suicide murder pills, Pierce.
Let's try and have a debate here.
Yeah.
Answer me this question.
I'm sick of the same old script here, bud.
It's fine, bud.
My God, bud.
How?
You're a hatchet man of the New World Order.
Okay.
You're a hatchet man. And I want to say this right here. You think you're a tough guy? Have me back with a boxing ring in here, and I'll wear red, white, and blue, and you can wear your Jolly Roger.
Okay. You finished?
Yes, I am finished. 1776 will commence again.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
We're going to stay here all night if we have to, so let's get started.
Can I go when this starts to suck?
Suicide is a suicide. Suicide is a suicide. Suicide is a suicide.
If life is a drug, then I've been taking some hard hits. Like, I'm trying to see how intense the sense of humor of God gets, but I'm dedicated, because I know spoken word can make the living come alive. And if I'm involved, we're going to require at least 5 30-plus single black mothers, otherwise it could be pointless. Because if this is God's work and the man on the microphone is anointed, then if you provide him with the conditions he requires, he might be able to use his art to make your heart drop into your lap. Move this room into a whole nother world. Take all them young cats that just came here to mingle and say something to make their brains tingle without drug the first. Because this is that spoken love that hurts. Every phrase is tasered to make your blood feel electric. But you can't just take a hit. The hit's got to take. This is that spoken word where you've got to swallow the smoke from the words. Open up your mind and let your brain float from the words. Think of something in your life you want to change and gain hope from the words. Because that's how the living come alive. And this is that bona fide. I made it with the dust off of old 78s and 45s. Codified it in the spoken word, digitized it into ones and zeros, and MP3'd it for your iPod. Heavy underground like the Earth's core, the crowd recognized the underground heavy from the tat that he wore. Allow me to introduce that energy that only inner God can produce. Come to spoken word, get your inner God seduced. Because what else can move your inner self outside yourself like the truth? But that's how the living come alive. And if you don't know what a juke joint is, there's a very good chance you ain't gonna understand what the point is. But this is underground, so they can't convince me to call myself Black Teed and show up to the mic every night wearing this black tee, because my style ain't so earthy, it's so unlike Black Tee. You might need to bring a mason jar of corn liquor with you. Pop off the lid, take a hard twig, let that corn liquor hit you. At the end of the night, meet us at the bar, cop yourself a large snifter. That's if you with the Mr. Picture This, Gordon Parks, James Van Der Zee. It's all right when I'm on the mic if you want to close your eyes and breathe life into your fantasy, but remember, ain't nobody here but me and you right now. And ain't no coincidences, I was sent here for you right now. To tell you, if you want to change your life, you better make it do whatever you want it to do right now. But I hope you want more from life than money, because money ain't hard to come by if money is the only thing that you absolutely care about. But you should know that life is just preparation for something more majestic, and spoken word is just life when it's presented at its most expressive. And the reason why poetry ain't bigger in this society is because this society is oppressive, and every oppressor since the dawn of time has tried to dead whatever art form made the living come alive.
This is the conspiratorial view of history as opposed to the accidental view, and it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
Monday, January 6, 1941, the President of the United States presents his message on the State of the Union. We speak to you from the floor of the House of Representatives in the Capitol Building in Washington, where the microphones are placed to bring you this important address.
Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, members of the 77th Congress. I address you, the members of this new Congress, at a moment unprecedented in the history of the Union. I use the word unprecedented because at no previous time has American security been as seriously threatened from without as it is today. Since the permanent formation of our government under the Constitution in 1789, most of the periods of crisis in our history have related to our domestic affairs. And fortunately, only one of these, the four-year war between the states, ever threatened our national unity. Today, thank God, 130 million Americans in 48 states have forgotten points of the compass in our national unity. In the future days which we seek to make secure, we look forward to a world founded upon four essential human freedoms. The first is freedom of speech and expression everywhere in the world. The second is freedom of every person to worship God in his own way everywhere in the world. The third is freedom from want, which translated into world terms means economic understandings which will secure to every nation a healthy peacetime life for its inhabitants everywhere in the world. The fourth is freedom from fear, which translated into world terms means a worldwide reduction of armaments to such a point and in such a thorough fashion that no nation will be in a position to commit an act of physical aggression against any neighbor anywhere in the world. That is no vision of a distant millennium. It is a definite basis for a kind of world attainable in our own time and generation. That kind of world is the very antithesis of the so-called new order of tyranny which the dictators seek to create with the crash of a bomb.
This old man, he played one, he played knick-knack on my farm with a knick-knack buddy, why give your dog a bone? This old man came rolling home. This old man, he played two, he played knick-knack on my shoe with a knick-knack buddy, why give your dog a bone? This old man, he played three, he played knick-knack on my knee with a knick-knack paddywhack. This old man. This old man, he played four, he played knick-knack on my door with a knick-knack paddywhack. Give your dog a bone. This old man came rolling. He played knick-knack on my shoe.
Hi, everybody. This week, I welcome President Hamid Karzai to the White House to discuss the way ahead in Afghanistan. And today, I want to update you on how we will end this war, bring our troops home, and continue the work of rebuilding America. Over the past 4 years, thanks to our brave men and women in uniform, we've dealt devastating blows to al-Qaeda. We've pushed the Taliban out of their strongholds. And our core objective, the reason we went to war in the first place, is now within reach, ensuring that al-Qaeda can never again use Afghanistan to launch attacks against America. The 33,000 additional forces that I ordered to Afghanistan served with honor. They completed their mission, and as promised, returned home last fall. This week, we agreed that this spring, Afghan forces will take the lead for security across the entire country, and our troops will shift to a support role. In the coming months, I'll announce the next phase of our drawdown. And by the end of next year, America's war in Afghanistan will be over.
It was a very stressful time for me, the war. I'll tell you why. I was in the unenviable position of being for the war, but against the troops. And not the most popular stance I've ever taken on an issue, I must say. I don't choose wisely always, and yet I'm committed. So, first of all, this needs to be said. There never was a war.
How can you say that, Bill?
Well, a war is when two armies are fighting.
You might think that a Republican, Vietnam veteran, former senator with all kinds of foreign policy experience would be the perfect choice to ease the rancor on Capitol Hill.
Chuck Hagel, former Secretary of Defense.
But Chuck Hagel is going to have to fight for confirmation.
Chuck Hagel's leadership of our military would be historic. He'd be the first person of enlisted rank to serve as Secretary of Defense.
And look, the president, yes, he's picking a fight here. There's no question.
Listen, this is going to be a big fight, it sounds like. In picking the former Nebraska senator, Republican Chuck Hagel, for this post, the president can argue that he's reaching out across the aisle.
One of the few secretaries who've been wounded in war. And the first Vietnam veteran to lead the department.
Some of Hagel's staunchest opposition may come from Senate Republicans.
It's very difficult to imagine a circumstance in which I could support his confirmation.
This is an in-your-face nomination by the president.
In-your-face.
Is the president setting this in-your-face tone for his second term?
I think the president would call it, Carol, something very different. I think he would call it his comfort zone.
It is in your face to neoconservatives, and that goes to neoconservative Dems and neoconservative Republicans.
Yes, he's a Republican, but as you noted, he's more of an independent, more of a maverick.
In Chuck Hagel, our troops see a decorated combat veteran of character and strength. They see one of their own.
I suspect he'll get a fairly strong vote. He's obviously going to have some dissenters on the issue of policy, and they're going to vote against him as a statement of disagreeing with some of the things he said in the past, especially on Israel.
I'm also grateful for an opportunity to help continue to strengthen our country and strengthen our country's alliances and advance global freedom, decency, and humanity as we help build a better world for all mankind.
With Chuck, our troops will always know, just like Sergeant Hagel was there for his own brother, Secretary Hagel will be there for you.
And it looks like the second term of Barack Obama is going to be an in-your-face term.
For me, after close to 50 years of serving the American people, began in 1964 when I served as a first lieutenant in the United States Army, and then in both the legislative and executive branch positions in Washington. The time has come for me to return to my wife Sylvia, our three sons, their families, our six grandchildren, and my walnut farm. Dealing with a different set of nuts.
Chugga rock, chugga rock, and the ring, chugga rock, chugga rock, and the ring, chugga
two outstanding public servants. I think the only point that I want to make, leave you with, is the fact that I had never noticed Jack's signature. And when this was highlighted yesterday in the press, I considered rescinding my offer to appoint him. Jack assures me that he is going to work to make at least one letter legible in order not to debase our currency, should he be confirmed as Secretary of the Treasury.
View of the Canadian Rockies, courtesy astronaut and shutterbug Chris Hatfield. He's been snapping some of Earth's greatest natural wonders, including the Alps, the Pyramids, and the Sahara Desert. This is the Bahamas, every shade of blue he observed. There are also several shots of Canadian cities in the snow, and he's sending them all out on his Twitter feed.
There are white folks, and then there are ignorant motherfuckers like you.
The American Psychiatric Association has issued an alarming study warning that the nation's used car salesmen are going completely insane, and in some extreme cases, practically giving cars away. The APA traces the outbreak of widespread hysteria to an apparent overstock of high-quality late-model cars begging to be driven off the lot today. Some severe symptoms include delusions, manic exuberance, and a psychotic commitment to offer the lowest prices guaranteed. Victims' families are joining together to raise awareness of this serious psychological epidemic.
No one knows how difficult it is to live with a husband who treats every customer like a superstar. The authorities found out how unbelievably low his prices were, they'd lock him up and throw away the key.
You are not alone. Over half of America's used car salesmen are currently going bonkers.
Car dealers suffering from this condition are prone to project their own disorders onto others. According to Mad Max, the Car Czar's website, you're out of your mind if you're not taking advantage of these low, low prices.
Modern psychology has a word that is probably used more than any other word in psychology. It is the word maladjusted. It is the ringing cry of modern child psychology, maladjusted. Now, of course, we all want to live the well-adjusted life in order to avoid neurotic and schizophrenic personalities. But as I move toward my conclusion, I would like to say to you today, in a very honest manner, that there are some things in our society and some things in our world for which I'm proud to be maladjusted. And I call upon all men of goodwill to be maladjusted to these things until the good society is realized. I must honestly say to you that I never intend to adjust myself to racial segregation and discrimination. I never intend to adjust myself to religious bigotry. I never intend to adjust myself to economic conditions that will take necessities from the many to give luxuries to the few and leave millions of God's children smothering in an airtight cage of poverty in the midst of an affluent society.
Our strategy should not only be to confront empire, but to lay siege to it, to deprive it of oxygen, to shame it, to mock it, with our art, our music, our literature, our stubbornness, our joy, our brilliance, our sheer restlessness, and our ability to tell our own stories, stories that are different from ones that we're being brainwashed to believe. The corporate revolution will collapse if we refuse to buy what they're selling, their ideas, their vision of history, their wars, their weapons, their notion of inevitability. Remember this, we may be many and they may be few. They need us more than we need them. Another world is not only possible, she is on her way, and on a quiet day, I can hear her breathing.
now with a disturbing new look at the growing problem of binge drinking in our country. Today, the Centers for Disease Control warned that excessive drinking is a big problem, especially and acutely for women in the United States, and it results in the deaths of some 23,000 women and girls every year. Our report here tonight from NBC's Rahema Ellis.
In movies, TV, and music, it's art imitating life.
You smell like booze. Just go to bed.
According to a new report by the CDC, younger women aren't just drinking in large numbers. The drinking is becoming potentially dangerous and is often overlooked as a health problem for women who respond to alcohol differently than men.
Some of these differences include females being more susceptible to the effect of alcohol on risk of cancer, the effects of alcohol on the liver. Females are more susceptible to the effects of alcohol on the brain in terms of brain damage.
Binge drinking is defined as at least four drinks in one occasion, something young women say they see all the time.
Women maybe like they like to let loose and have fun.
They want to go and they want to drink and they want to relax.
They'll trap you and they use you, and before you even know, for love is blind and you're far too kind, don't ever let it show.
In a survey of about 278,000 women 18 and older, nearly 14 million women binge drink about three times a month. That's one in eight women. Among 7,500 high school girls, the report finds one in five report binge drinking. Who is most likely to binge drink? White and Hispanic women between 18 and 34 years old, and those with household incomes of $75,000 or more. Why is it happening? Experts say it could be pressure.
One of the things that we might be seeing is a coping mechanism in binge drinking, and alcohol is being something to be stress relief.
I wish that I knew what I know now. I wish that I knew what I know now, when I was stronger.
Senator Rand Paul's son, William Hilton Paul, was arrested over the weekend. The 19-year-old charged with three misdemeanors at the Charlotte airport: disorderly conduct, underage consumption of alcohol, and being intoxicated and disruptive. Senator Paul's office released this statement. Senator Paul is a national public figure and subject to scrutiny in the public arena. However, as many parents with teenagers would understand, his family should be afforded the privacy and respect they deserve in a situation such as this.
The king can't such a pretty show, steals your heart away. The backstage back on earth again, the dressing rooms are great. You come on strong and it ain't too long for to make you feel a man. The love is blind and you soon will find you're just a boy again. I wish that I knew what I know now.
Sunday morning at the Vatican is usually a time for public piety and quiet reflection. Not so this weekend, for as believers gathered in St. Peter's Square to hear the Pope's weekly Angelus prayer, this happened. 4 women stripped off despite the freezing temperatures to reveal the words "In Gay We Trust" painted across their naked chests as they screamed for the Pope to shut up.
In Gay We Trust!
The raucous display was the latest protest by Ukrainian feminist group Femin against the Catholic Church's stance against gay marriage and adoption. And while most of the congregation looked on in stunned silence, it all became too much for one elderly lady. She decided to take the law into her own hands, armed with nothing but her trusty umbrella.
When you want her lips, you get her cheek, makes you wonder where you are. If you want some more, then she's fast asleep, keeps you twinkling with the stars. For your grandson, there's nothing I can see. You have to learn, just like me, and that's the hardest way. I wish that I knew what I know now. When I was younger, I wish that I knew what I know now. When I was stronger, I wish that I knew what I know now. When I was younger, I wish that I knew what I know now. When I was stronger.
An Oregon teenager may want to change his privacy settings after a Facebook post got him in trouble with the law. Over the New Year's holiday, Jacob Cox Brown told 650 of his friends on Facebook that he drove drunk. He posted, quote, "Driving drunk classic, but to whoever's vehicle I hit, I'm sorry." At least one of those friends notified Astoria police, who tracked down the 18-year-old. Our sister station in Portland talked with him.
Yeah, sure. Like, I probably shouldn't have posted what I said on there. And I kind of regret it, you know, because, like I said, it got blown way out of proportion. But I don't know.
Police say Cox Brown hit at least two cars. He was arrested for hit and run.
Headline on the Forbes website is scary. It reads, "Doomsday asteroid bigger than expected." They're talking about a football field size asteroid called 99942 Apophis. And while it's going to pass by us tonight, and it's okay to make plans for tomorrow, when it comes back in the year 2029, it will pass so close, just over 30,000 miles, it's going to be visible in broad daylight.
Woe is us! We're in a lot of trouble!
Relatives of computer prodigy Aaron Swartz say they're in shock after learning of his suicide. The 26-year-old hanged himself in his Brooklyn apartment. Swartz helped create the web feed system known as RSS when he was just 14. He also pioneered the free availability of information online. He was facing federal fraud charges related to the theft of millions of academic articles from MIT. He faced 35 years in prison and a $1 million fine. He had denied the claims.
A 51-year-old man from West Yorkshire has become the first person in the UK to have a hand transplant. Mark Carhill underwent a complex 8-hour operation at Leeds General Infirmary last week after a donor hand became available. A new technique was used which involved Mr. Carhill having his non-functioning right hand removed during the same operation as the donor hand was transplanted. This procedure allows very accurate restoration of nerve structures and is believed to be the first time this approach has been used.
I'm getting slight movement now. My feelings just started to come back.
but everything's looking very, very good. It's doing well. Long term, I won't have 100% use of it, but it's early days. We don't know exactly how much, but I'm obviously going to have a lot more use than had out of the existing hand. So everything's a bonus.
And Mark says he can't wait to start his new life.
Ammo, ammo, where you been? Been around the world and going again. What's going to do when you get back? That left on the railroad track. Ammo, ammo. Ammo, walk, ammo, walk. Ammo, eat with a shovel and a ammo.
Anyone who's watched this show over the past few weeks knows I've taken a pretty strong stand on guns in America. It's not escaped the notice of supporters of gun rights, and it's led to a petition on the White House official website, no less. It's entitled, and I quote, "Deport British citizen Piers Morgan for attacking Second Amendment." Take a look. More than 104,000 people have signed it so far. And joining me now is one of the people behind the petition, Alex Jones. He's host of the Alex Jones Show. Welcome to you.
Piers, thanks for having me.
Why do you want to deport me?
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again. Because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound. Silence.
The Russian government, the official Chinese government, Mao said political power goes out of the barrel of a gun. He killed about 80 million people. If you try to take our firearms, doesn't matter how many lemmings you get out there on the street begging for them to have their guns taken, we will not relinquish them. Do you understand? Don't try what your ancestors did before. Why don't you come to America? I'll take you out shooting. You can become an American and join the Republic. You will not take my right. You go through background checks to get guns. How about Prozac? You know the number one, oh, that's the big sponsor, isn't it? Or that whole class of drugs.
Let me ask you a question.
Oh, whoa, got to cut that off, don't you? Don't want to talk about the U.S. number one cause of death is suicide now because they give people suicide mass murder pills.
In restless dreams I walked alone. Narrow streets of cobblestone. Neath the halo of a street lamp, I turned my collar to the cold and damp. When my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a neon light that split the night and touched the sound of silence.
How many great white sharks?
No, how many
kill people every year, but they're scared to swim.
Right.
There's no metal shark in the water. How many chimpanzees can dance on the head of a pin? Got hordes of people burning down cities and beating old women's brains out every day. Suicide, mass murder pills. I want to say this right here. You think you're a tough guy? Have me back with a boxing ring in here, and I'll wear red, white, and blue, and you can wear your Jolly Roger.
Alex.
Mass murder pill!
And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more. People talking without speaking. People hearing without listening. People writing songs that voices never share. And no one dared disturb the sound of silence.
America was born on guns and whiskey.
Right,
but it's true we're a violent society.
Right.
Suicide pills.
Alex.
Mass murder pills.
Okay.
When a mother chops her kids up with a cleaver, suicide pills.
Alex.
Mass murder pills.
Okay. Who do you believe was behind it? The American government?
criminal elements of the military-industrial complex, the same ones that staged Gulf of Tonkin, the same ones that staged Operation, the mass shootings of Operation Gladio.
Right.
Ooh, the CIA don't like this right now.
Do you murder thousands of Americans?
To murder, I can speak in this accent as well.
Yeah.
I probably own more than 50 firearms.
Okay, whatever.
Fools, said I, you do not know. Silence like a cancer grows. Hear my words that I might teach you. Take my arms that I might reach you. But my words, like silent raindrops, fell and echoed in the wells of silence.
It is pathetic. It is ridiculous that you are allowed, I don't care what the justification is, that you are allowed in this country to own a semi-automatic weapon, much less a handgun. But what do you need a semi-automatic weapon for? The only reason I think you need it is, Pierce, challenge Alex Jones to a boxing match, show up with a semi-automatic that you got legally, and pop him.
I'd love to see that.
And the people bowed and prayed. The neon god they made, and the sign flashed its warning in the words that it was forming, and the sign said the words of the prophets are written on the subway walls and tenement halls, and whispered in the sound silence.
Over the past few weeks, the argument over gun control has raged, and among those demanding stricter gun laws is CNN host Piers Morgan. There's one particular stat that Morgan has been citing for weeks. In our commitment to balanced news, Ben investigates the truth behind it in Reality Check.
Last night on CNN's Piers Morgan Tonight, Morgan interviewed radio host Alex Jones. And to say it was wild, well, that would be an understatement. But we wanted to take a look at some of that exchange, because the stat that Piers Morgan was continuing to cite, one that Great Britain, which banned guns about 15 years ago, had only 35 gun-related murders in 2011, compared to the United States, which had 11,000. Let's start there, because that number is not correct. According to FBI crime stats for 2011, there were 12,664 homicides in the U.S. Of those, 8,583 were caused by firearms. But of those, 400 are listed as justifiable homicide by law enforcement, 260 justifiable homicide by private citizens. On the other hand, it is true that percentage-wise, Britain has a lower gun homicide rate. With a population of 62.6 million, Great Britain saw 59 gun-related homicides for 2011. Still, not the 35 Piers Morgan keeps citing. But that shouldn't be surprising that the gun homicide rate in a country that bans guns would be lower than in a country where guns are not banned. Where the argument falls apart is when you attempt to claim that fewer guns equals less crime. The U.S. has the highest gun ownership rate in the world, an average of 88 guns per 100 people. That puts it first in the world for gun ownership. Yemen is second with 54.8 guns per 100 people. So that means the U.S. has the highest gun murder rate as well, right? Well, no. Honduras, El Salvador, and Jamaica have higher rates. So do 24 other countries. The U.S., despite being number one in gun ownership, is number 28 in gun homicide, with a rate of 2.97 per 100,000 people. Of course, Piers Morgan isn't calling for the U.S. to be more like El Salvador and Honduras. He's calling for us to be more like Great Britain. So what do the numbers look like there? The U.K. has the second highest overall crime rate in the EU. The U.K. has the fifth highest robbery rate, the fourth highest burglary rate. But more importantly, the EU named Britain as the most violent country in the EU. In the UK, there are 2,034 violent crimes per 100,000 people. That puts it way ahead of even South Africa, with a rate of 1,609 per 100,000. In the United States, we're not even in the top 10. The US has a violent crime rate of 466 crimes per 100,000 residents. So what this means for you is that while people like Morgan insist that the US can learn from Great Britain, well, maybe we can. What we might learn is that violent crime is not the result of a gun or any tool. It is the result of the heart of men and women.
But there is never any justification for violence.
The human brain, it can reason, it keeps us alive, it's the most powerful weapon that we own. So, how does it compare with this gun? This gun can shoot a 9mm bullet at 1,300 feet per second. It has a muzzle energy of 475 foot-pounds. If I were to fire it at any one of you in the front row, it would turn your head to mush. You see, the gun is the highest threat to our health, to our safety. So why don't we run away cowering whenever some suspicious person is wielding their brain? We need to start using our brains the same way that we use our guns. Firing thoughts the way that we fire bullets. Taking our guns into the workplace, into schools, into busy city intersections, and just spraying everybody with gunfire until the corpses pile up at your feet, or until you're killed by the police. Our brains are really just as dangerous as guns, aren't they? Aren't they? Now, this puzzle, my brain solved this puzzle. My gun cannot do that. My brain ripped through this puzzle like a hollow point bullet, embedding it with shrapnel of reason until the whole thing just bled out. It is the most deadly weapon. Now, the gun does not fall for any stupid tricks. The gun is truth. When I pull this trigger, truth happens. So, old ideas have gotten us what? Debt, climate change, economic inequality. What we have to do is clear the air of old ideas. Moving forward is driven on the fear of not having a good future. We need to inspire that terror in our brain guns, except exchange the terror with innovation. Now, Sam. Sorry. Now, you see, we consistently underestimate the power of our brains. Now, if I did this with my brain, want to get close, wouldn't blink, wouldn't even shiver. But every time I bring a fresh new idea on how to reshape society, throw that on the table, I'm threatening to murder inefficiency right here on this stage in front of everyone. I mean, all I have to do is this. So now you can see what my brain can do. No one really knows how the brain works. One cannot prepare for the sudden impact of an idea penetrating your skull at some immeasurable speed. When it actually does happen, but one has to cut ties with all old ways of thinking because you're just shooting with intellectual blanks.
Because I know if Jesus were here, he'd probably have an Uzi on him.
Gorilla sales skyrocket after the latest gorilla attack. AIG blows all the goodwill built up by Wall Street in recent years, and Taylor Swift is now dating James Holmes. It's time for a comprehensive look at this week's news events approved by the Illuminati, Freemasons, and our alien overlords. This is the Onion Week in Review. Shortly after realizing that his mother forgot to pay his most recent phone bill, 29-year-old Tom Flanagan reminded her to really be careful about that kind of thing.
Mom, the phone company called today about my cell phone bill.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I completely forgot.
No, Mom, I'm not mad, but you have to stay on top of these things. Just so you know, this really easy thing you can do, you know, is this online auto pay just deducts in your bank account every month.
Yeah, quite easy. I know.
It's fine. It's fine. Just don't let it become a pattern. You know, I know you can do better than this.
A police raid this week revealed appalling conditions within Cosmopolitan magazine's male pleasure laboratory. Investigators discovered dozens of weak and frightened men being cruelly abused by Cosmo researchers for the monthly magazine's exhaustive studies of male stimulation. Video evidence obtained from the lab shows subjects enduring hours of grueling treatment, including diet alteration, extensive prodding and probing, and dangerous exposure to sexual stimuli.
blasted sultry songs into my ears and made me simulate 50 crazy hot sex moves. They said I couldn't rest until they found the bliss button on my Randy Regents. James didn't make it. They kept spraying him over and over again with seductive scents until he just couldn't take it anymore. I'll always remember the last look he gave me.
According to reports this week, 27-year-old Mark Felder has an alarming level of pride for his alma mater, the University of Miami, an institution which left him $50,000 in debt and completely unprepared for the current job market. Felder, who graduated from the school in 2007 with a Bachelor of Science degree in communications, told reporters he fondly remembers watching Hurricanes football games, hanging out at local bars, and regularly going to the beach while attending the school that failed to teach him any marketable skills whatsoever.
I would not trade my time at the University of Miami for anything. Miami has the best college experience in the country, hands down. I had an awesome time there, and it's an amazing place. I've got the U in my blood forever. It's like a family. When you're a Cane for life. Miami's a good school, too. People forget that. I think we have one of the best business schools in the country, and I'm pretty sure our law program's in the top 10.
And in local news, only the difficult pistachios are left. In other news, an overweight 6-year-old vows to change his life after his latest heart attack. An Air Force One pilot invites an excited Obama to the cockpit. And a career spider is unsure if she's ready for 3,000 children at this point.
That iPhone or BlackBerry, look up from your computer screen or video game, stop texting, emailing, chatting online. It turns out that the internet could be driving us crazy.
Yeah!
Cyberspace is a metaphorical idea, which is supposed to be the space where your consciousness is located when you're using computer technology on the internet, for example. And I'm not entirely sure it's such a useful term, but I think that's what most people mean by it. The most interesting thing about the term, for me, is that it made me begin to think about where one's consciousness is when interacting with other kinds of media. For example, even when you're reading, where are you? What is the space in which your consciousness is located? And when you're watching television, where are you? Who are you? Because people say with the internet, for example, it's a little different in that you are always interacting, or most of the time, with another person. And when you're in cyberspace, I suppose you can be anyone you want. And I think, as this program indicates, it's worth talking about, because this is a new idea and something very different from face-to-face co-presence with another human being. I've mostly decided that new technology, this kind or any other kind, is a kind of Faustian bargain. It always gives us something important, but it also takes away something that's important. That's been true of the alphabet and the printing press and telegraphy right up through the computer. For instance, when I hear people talk about the information superhighway, it will become possible to shop at home and bank at home and get your texts at home and get entertainment at home and so on. I often wonder if this doesn't signify the end of any meaningful community life. When two human beings get together and they're co-present, there is built into it a certain responsibility we have for each other. And when people are co-present in family relationships and other relationships, that responsibility is there. You can't just turn off a person. On the internet, you can. And I wonder if this doesn't diminish that built-in human sense of responsibility we have for each other. Then also one wonders about social skills, that after all, talking to someone on the internet is a different proposition from being in the same room with someone, not in terms of responsibility, but just in terms of revealing who you are and discovering who the other person is. As a matter of fact, I'm one of the few people, not only that you're likely to interview, but maybe even ever meet, who is opposed to the use of personal computers in school. Because school, it seems to me, has always largely been about how to learn as part of a group. School has never really been about individualized learning, but about how to be socialized as a citizen and as a human being, so that we have important rules in school, always emphasizing the fact that one is part of a group. And I worry about the personal computer because it seems once again to emphasize individualized learning and individualized activity. Well, the worst images are of people who are overloaded with information which they don't know what to do with, have no sense of what is relevant and what is irrelevant, people who become information junkies. The problem in the 19th century with information was that we lived in a culture of information scarcity. And so humanity addressed that problem, beginning with photography and telegraphy in the 1840s. We tried to solve the problem of overcoming the limitations of space, time, and form. And for about 100 years, we worked on this problem and we solved it in a spectacular way. And now, by solving that problem, we created a new problem that people have never experienced before. Information glut, information meaninglessness, information incoherence. I mean, if there are children starving in Somalia or any other place, it's not because of insufficient information. And if crime is rampant in the streets in New York and Detroit, in Chicago or wherever, it's not because of insufficient information. And if people are getting divorced and mistreating their children, and if sexism and racism are blights on our social life, none of that has anything to do with inadequate information. Now along comes cyberspace and the information superhighway, and everyone seems to have the idea that, here, we can do it. If only we can have more access to more information faster and in more diverse forms, at long last we'll be able to solve these problems. And I don't think it has anything to do with it. When McLuhan talked about the world becoming a global village, and when people ask, as you did, about how connections can be made, everyone seemed to think that the world would become, in some good sense, more homogeneous. But we seem to be experiencing the opposite. I mean, all over the world we see a kind of reversion to tribalism. People are going back to their tribal roots in order to find a sense of identity. I mean, we see it in Russia, in Yugoslavia, in Canada, in the United States. I mean, in our own country, why is it that every group now not only is more aware of its own grievances, but seems to want its own education? You know, we want an Afrocentric curriculum and a Korean-centric curriculum and a Greek-centered curriculum. What is it about all this globalization of communication that is making people return to more to smaller units of identity? It's a puzzlement. When confronted with a new technology, whether it's a cellular phone or high-definition television or cyberspace or internet, the question, or one question should be, what is the problem to which this technology is a solution? And the second question would be, whose problem is it actually? And the third question would be, if there is a legitimate problem here that is solved by the technology, what other problems will be created by my using this technology? About 6 months ago, I bought a new Honda Accord, and the salesman told me that it had cruise control. And I asked him, what is the problem to which cruise control is the solution? By the way, there's an extra charge for cruise control. And he said no one had ever asked him that before, but then he said, well, it's the problem of keeping your foot on the gas. And I said, well, I've been driving for 35 years. I'd never found that to be a problem. I mean, am I using this technology, or is it using me?
Do you like being a participant in the watering can of the flowers of freedom throughout the world?
There is a point. Is there a point to all this? Let's find a point. Is this real, 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 or is this just a ride? The world is like a ride. You think it's real, it's just a ride. We can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice between fear and love. The world is like a ride. You think it's real, it's just a ride. We can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice between fear and love. Life goes up and down, round and round. It has thrills and chills, and it's very brightly colored. Up and down, round and round, and it's very loud. Don't worry, don't be afraid, It's just a ride, and we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice between fear and love. Why are we here?
I think we're part of a greater wisdom than we will ever understand. A higher order. Call it what you want. Know what I call it?
The big electron. The big electron. The big electron. It doesn't punish. It doesn't reward. It doesn't judge at all. It just is. And so are we. For a little while, the ride goes up and down, round and round. It has thrills and chills, and it's very brightly colored. Up and down, round and round, and it's very loud. Don't worry, don't be afraid, It's just a ride, and we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice between fear and love. The big electron. It doesn't punish, it doesn't reward, it doesn't judge at all. It just is, and so are we, for a little while.
Now, go find the others.com.
Thomas Jefferson said, if you expect a country to be ignorant and free, you expect what never was and never will be.